This is Impact on KLOS Los Angeles. My name is Frank Sontag. In studio, I have the founder of Alive and Well AIDS Alternatives, Christine Maggiore. And we have a lot of calls and a couple of open lines at 800-955-KLOS if you'd like to possibly get on the air with Christine. I'm going to begin taking calls in just a couple of minutes. I want you to share with me what you shared off the air with me about this article and about this notion that healthcare practitioners that may be subjected to this, and they were told, well, this is what you need to do. This is a good idea. And it sounds like a, I don't want to say a bad movie, because this is real life and we're talking about people.
Yeah.
But this is outrageous.
It's pretty outrageous. What this is a news report from January 4th on, it says U.S. issues warning on one use of anti-AIDS drug. And this report is specifically about a drug called nevirapine or Viramune. And this is the drug that's being pushed to be used for pregnant women in South Africa. And what they discovered was that in healthcare workers who feared that they had been stuck with a needle that may have been in somebody who tested HIV positive or had a diagnosis of AIDS, they were told to take this drug to prevent alleged transmission of HIV. Well, after a couple years of using this drug, and this is all voluntary reporting, there was a great number of cases of serious side effects, mostly affecting the liver, liver toxicity, and even liver failure, requiring one healthcare worker to get a liver transplant. Now, normally you see somebody who's had a lifetime of abuse to their liver requiring a liver transplant, not somebody who's been taking a prescription drug for a few weeks for supposedly a good thing to prevent an illness. You see a liver transplant going to somebody who's just completely destroyed their liver. That's how harshly toxic these drugs are to the liver and other vital organs. And what's interesting too about this article, it mentions, after all these years of hearing, you know, just one needle stick and you could become HIV positive, just one needle stick, still, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control, we have a grand total in about 20 years of 25 healthcare workers who have AIDS who claim, but it's not thoroughly investigated, that work-related exposure is why they have an AIDS diagnosis. So 25 in 20 years, and this article says that the risk of HIV transmission in this setting of healthcare workers is very low, and in most cases, taking the drugs, it's not even worth that risk. So, you know, it's again a situation of years and years of hearing just once, just one time, just one needle stick, and now, hey, you know, the risk really isn't there. Maybe you shouldn't take the drugs because they might cause you to end up dead.
It's outrageous.
Times change.
It's 1 o'clock in the morning. This is KLOS Los Angeles. Those of you that have talked to Terry and have been screened, be patient. We're going to get to all of you because we have a lot of very, very good questions this morning. And I want to try to do that portion of the program now and start taking calls. So we have Tom is our first caller. Tom, where are you calling from?
Well, I'm calling from Huntington Beach.
Okay. You're on a line 14, which is an out-of-the-area line, which is,
right.
I don't know how you did that.
Well,
but you're in Huntington Beach.
Well, I kind of know Christine a little bit.
Okay, well, you're on the air with her.
I try to keep myself anonymous somewhat. But I wanted to first say I applaud you for having her on the show and for you having the courage to take up this topic. And I'm not positive myself, but I know plenty of people who are. And certainly the people that I know who are still alive are the ones who don't take the drugs. And I'm very into natural health and health care. And it's really unfortunate that in this day and age that money and profits are far more important than people's lives. And I think that's the real issue here in the whole thing with AIDS. And I think it's more... The drug companies don't care about people, they care about profits, and anybody that thinks that they don't is fooling themselves. And like she said, with all the new approvals and everything, you know, it's all designed. I think that the Federal Drug Administration should be renamed the Federal Drug Company Protection Corporation, because I think that's pretty much what they do. That's their job. The other things I would like to, are you there?
Yeah, we're both here.
Oh, sorry. Okay, I didn't hear anything. I wanted to also touch on some other things and ask some questions about some alternative treatments.
Well, let me share with you, we have a lot of people on hold. Okay. So if you do have a question, it's best that maybe you throw it out there at the beginning here, and then I'll give you a moment or two to comment on something if you feel compelled to do that.
Okay. First of all, I know of a lot of things about alternative treatments, and if you take the two people in particular, Magic Johnson, and you also take, I forget his name, but he's a spokesman for Target. You take a look at those two people. I personally know that Magic Johnson has had some kind of alternative treatment, mostly involving polyatomic oxygen, which is a treatment that you go for about 6 weeks to have done. And if you look, but yet Magic Johnson says that he is taking the drugs. If you look the difference between him and somebody who is actually on the drugs, you can plainly see that Magic Johnson is not telling the truth and that something is up, and he's been told not to say anything to anybody about it because he's totally healthy. If you look at, I believe his name is Scott Hamilton or whatever, you see his face is all pushed back like she's talking about from the drugs, and I think that it's quite obvious even to somebody who's just a lay person that that's what's going on. But yet, unfortunately, this is never talked about.
Okay, well, I appreciate you mentioning it on the program, and I need to know if you have a question for Christy.
Speaking of alternative treatments, I was wondering if she knows specifically about this treatment called polyatomic afferentesis, which is an oxygen kind of therapy where they take the blood out, expose it to some sort of oxygen and replace it back into the body, and if she feels that's helpful to people that do have some health compromising problems from their HIV positive.
I think with regard to your question, the most important thing is to treat people as people. Just because people test HIV positive, it doesn't suddenly make them all the same. And that is how mainstream medicine sees people who test HIV positive. If you're 23 years old and you've had sex with one person and you've lived a healthy life, if you're 50 years old and you've been shooting drugs for 20 years and living on the streets and haven't been living a healthy life, and you both test HIV positive, you're treated the same. You're given the same drugs, the same kind of prognosis. And that's not the way it should be. People should be treated based on their unique and individual health histories and health issues. And most people in this country that get an AIDS diagnosis and test HIV positive have no health issues. They have no health challenges. So treatment becomes a more complicated question. What are we treating? The notion of HIV, because these tests aren't even testing for HIV, and the drugs that are suggested by the mainstream are supposed to be anti-HIV drugs, but we see that they're wild non-specific from all the different side effects they cause. What we suggest at Alive and Well AIDS Alternatives is that people see a health practitioner that regards them as a unique individual person, looks beyond their HIV diagnosis, and searches for what may be the cause of any health problems they're experiencing. And I'll give you one quick example. There was a person who was wasting away suddenly after being HIV positive and not on any medicines for 10 years. AIDS doctors, of course, wanted to say the AIDS kicked in. He pursued that further, knowing that HIV, for him anyway, could not be the source of his problem. Found that he had a colon condition that was hereditary, had surgery, recovered, and is fine. Had he followed the mainstream, where everybody who's HIV positive is rotated between 14 different so-called antiretroviral drugs, he would have never resolved his health problem. So that's what we suggest, is that people see health professionals that see them as people, not just HIV positives, and get to the root cause of whatever health problem they may have. And many people who test positive, many people given an AIDS diagnosis, don't even have health problems.
Tom, I thank you for the call this morning. We've got Mark, Phil, Austin, and Matthew are the next four callers. Christine, we also had a man named Jim who is not there. He wanted to know, the question was, which organizations or companies are spreading rumors that AIDS is on the rise?
Gee, who isn't? That's a tough one. Every major media outlet, every AIDS organization, except, you know, ours and organizations like ours that raise questions and look beyond the headlines. I don't think there's an organization regarding AIDS or a government agency regarding AIDS that isn't claiming that it's a constant problem. And when they can't do it with hard numbers, what they do is percentages. You can make decreasing numbers seem like increasing numbers if you express them with percentages. And if you'll notice, a lot of news reports don't give hard numbers but give percentages.
I know for me, if the question was posed to me, it seems as if I can't open up a newspaper or have access to just about any mainstream channel where you don't hear the word epidemic. It's always equated in there, and yet who's questioning that? What does that mean? Epidemic, that obviously means that this is rampant, and you know, people that are well-informed know it could be further from the truth. So, Mark, you're on the air with Christine Maggiore from Alive and Well. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Christine. How are you doing?
I'm fine, thanks.
Great. I've got a tough question with some hard numbers for you. I'll make it fairly brief. AIDS is meant to be a sexually transmitted disease, if you believe the mainstream. But of the 2,667 reported deaths in 1999, 1,112 of them took place in Texas. That's a total of 41.6953%. Nearly half, in other words. That's five times the combination of New York, California, Nevada, and Alaska put together. You know, those are the states with large homosexual population, large population of prostitutes, the states you'd expect to have high numbers. In Nevada, there hasn't been one reported case. In Alaska, there hasn't been one reported mortality in 2 years. The only explanation I've been given for that is, one, a high degree of immigrants in Texas, but that would be also true of California, and two, that everyone in New York, California, Nevada, and so forth are using condoms. Even if that was true, the Mariposa Durex study showed condoms had up to 100% failure rate. Trojan Ribs had 22% failure rate. Another major brand had 100% failure rate. How would you explain that nearly half the AIDS deaths are in Texas?
Boy, that's a tough one. Maybe it has something to do with rodeos. I have no idea, but this is this is one of those amazing AIDS puzzles that we see where things don't add up. I think you'd really have to look at Texas. I mean, do they have certain programs that give people access to drug therapies early on? Certainly the reports now indicate that the people who started the drugs early are the ones who are paying the price with their lives. Maybe that might have something to do with it. I have no idea. But it's certainly interesting information, and I thank you for bringing it up.
Oh, thank you. And thank you for doing a wonderful job.
You're welcome.
Any of us can express how much appreciation we have for the amazing job you're doing.
Thank you very much.
Great. Good night.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
We appreciate the call. Phil was next, and I guess we lost him. He wanted to know, and this is a question that is pretty popular, what is the percentage of persons with HIV who end up having AIDS?
Boy.
Oh, wait, we do have him. We did him, and now he's back. Phil, you're on the air on KLOS.
My phone had gotten all tangled up. I was trying to untangle it.
Well, I'm glad you called back.
It hung up in the process.
So you wanted to ask Christine?
Yeah. Hi, Christine.
Hi.
You were saying that not all the AIDS tests are accurate and that they don't all reflect the actual percentage of HIV, and that you got all these different other kinds of diseases that are relabeled, and in some countries they don't call it that. And I was wondering, you say you have HIV, right?
I've tested HIV positive in 1992.
Now that's talking about the actual acquired immune deficiency syndrome that is associated with, that kills you eventually, right? That, I'm sorry. That is what called the legitimate disease that is mistakenly,
I think what your question is right. Have I tested positive? Yes. How many people who test positive go on to develop AIDS? Depending on what country you're in, it's generally speaking a very small percentage. And oddly, in countries where people have very little access to medical care, those are the countries in which the smallest percentage of HIV positives go on to develop AIDS. Also, too, no one is doing any kind of research or study into people like me who test HIV positive and are perfectly healthy. We are not called upon to participate in research studies. Nobody's looking to quantify the number of us who exist or what it is that we do or don't do that allows us to be HIV positive and healthy in defiance of all the well-laid rules that they have for HIV equals AIDS. And so that's a difficult question to answer, not because it's not a good question, it's a very important question, but unfortunately, no one is doing research into that aspect of this.
Phil, I thank you for the call. And Austin, you're on the air on KLOS with Christine Maggiore.
Hi, Frank.
Hi, Austin.
How are you doing, Christine?
I'm okay, thanks.
I'd just like to say I'm sorry to hear you got the disease, or whatever you call it. You say it's not a disease, right?
Well, it's basically a social stigma and a pain in the hiney.
I had three questions or comments on something you said. You said that they call it AIDS, but it's really not AIDS. It's several, if I understood you correctly, several different forms of sexually transmitted diseases that you get?
No, actually, none of the diseases in the category AIDS are sexually transmitted, as I recall. It's stuff like cancer, pneumonia, yeast infections, salmonella. You can get that from eating eggs that aren't cooked or chicken that's undercooked. And if you're HIV positive, that could be called AIDS. AIDS is not a disease itself. It's a collection of previously known conditions that can happen to people who are HIV positive, that can happen to people who are HIV negative, and all of them, all of these conditions called AIDS have causes and treatments that are totally unrelated to HIV.
That's unreal. So you're saying that there's several different things that can cause it?
Well, tuberculosis is caused by the tuberculosis bacteria, and that's an AIDS disease. If you're HIV positive, you're HIV negative and you have tuberculosis, you have tuberculosis. And the sad thing about that is, if you have TB and you live in Africa and you test HIV positive, you don't get TB medicine because there's not enough to go around, and they consider people who test positive as dying, so they don't get a fair chance to get better and live. They're told that they can't have medicines. And so it's a very cruel way of categorizing health and wellness.
Yeah, that's probably why we have to get inoculation shots when we go in their country, because it's so different. But I was wondering, you said something about HIV testing. You were saying, say you get a test, it might not show up tomorrow, or it shows up, or it might not show up.
Well, actually, what I was saying is that the HIV tests are not testing for HIV. They're not testing for the presence of the virus, and they're not testing for anything that is specific or unique to HIV. All of the tests that are currently in use do not test for HIV itself and are not able to identify anything that uniquely or specifically describes HIV or any component of HIV. So we call it an HIV test, but in reality, if it's not testing for HIV or anything that specifically describes it or is unique to HIV, it really isn't an HIV test. That's what I was saying.
Do you believe that you can get it, though, through I think I heard you say something about saliva and teardrops, sweat, and stuff like that?
I did not mention saliva, teardrops, and sweat, and
I
don't...
saliva, I thought, because I just want to say, when I was in Hawaii back in 1985, these friends that I was staying with had a radio in the bathroom, and when I turned on the light switch, that's the first thing you heard was the radio, and they said that it was proven that you can get AIDS through blood, sweat,
We've heard a lot of things that say it's been proven that. I mean, there's a lot of, I don't know how long you've listened to the interview, Austin, but we have a lot of mainstream information that says maybe what's true today or what's proven today, you know, a year or 5 years down the line, we're going to hear something completely different. In other words, the story has changed many times.
Right.
And a lot of these are assumptions that have no basis in scientific fact. Just think about it for a minute. If it was passed through sweat, everybody who ever entered a gym in, you know, the area, let's say West Hollywood, for instance, where there's a large population of people who test HIV positive, I mean, the people who work there, it's preposterous. That's right up there with mosquitoes and sneezing. And, you know, it's not founded in scientific fact. And all that does, all those ideas do, is whip up hysteria, make life difficult for people like me who test positive, make people more afraid of other people, and make people want to be more compliant with rules that don't make any sense about this whole thing. So I strongly suggest that you visit our website at questionaids.com and really take some time to look at this information and think about it.
I just want to say one thing too. I can't remember her name. I don't know if you guys would believe this or not because of what I just said about, you know, several different ways that could, like, several different diseases that could cause AIDS. There's an Australian doctor that she studied AIDS, and she said every time they came up with a means to combat AIDS, it alluded in several different directions.
Do we have a name for this doctor?
Well, if you call Calvary Chapel, it's on this...
Well, I think really the point here is that that's a common statement, that the HIV virus is so wily, so clever, it works like a thief, it can crack codes, it can leap tall buildings in a single bound and all this other stuff, when actually what HIV is supposed to do is it's supposed to destroy the human T cells of the immune system. Yet I have in front of me a government report that mentions the fact that what we call HIV is grown in human T cells, immortal T cells that are never affected by the presence of what is called HIV. So this whole idea that it's wily and tricky and all this other stuff, it's basically to kind of make a way of explaining the fact that none of the drugs that are supposed to be working against HIV are doing much of anything to help people actually recover their health and get better. So we talk about the virus in all these terms to try to make an explanation as to why all of our approaches in the mainstream are not working to really help people.
Austin, I thank you for the call. We've got Matthew, Sarah, and Scott will be the remaining three calls here. Matthew, you're on the air on KLOS with Christine Maggiore from Alive and Well. How are you, Matthew?
I'm fine. Hi, Frank.
Hi.
Hi, Christine.
Hi.
I have a quick question. Actually, the last caller, the beginning of his question, kind of is serving to set this up. I have a disorder called ITP, and that stands for idiopathic thrombocytopenia. It's a blood disorder, but it's pretty related to the immune system. And earlier you had talked about a list of conditions that fall under AIDS. You know, you mentioned yeast infections and cancers and things like that. I wanted to know if you knew if at any point that particular disease, ITP, ever came up on any list.
Well, I know that thrombocytopenia is one of the side effects of AIDS drugs.
Okay.
So, and what's the other one? Pancytopenia, which basically means, if you look at the Latin derivations of that word, it means death of all cells.
Mm-hmm.
And these are the side effects of the drugs that are supposed to be protecting the cells of the body against the onslaught of HIV. So it's interesting how the treatment drugs, actually AZT and other drugs like it that are used in these combination cocktails today, cause five of the principal AIDS-defining illnesses recognized in this country, including lymphoma, muscle wasting, life-threatening diarrhea, T-cell depletion, which is how we define AIDS, and dementia.
Yeah.
So these drugs, in addition, also cause thrombocytopenia, like you mentioned.
Interesting. Okay.
I'm sorry you have that.
Well, yeah, me too. But actually, I just got treated for it, I've been dealing with it for a few years, but I just had a splenectomy, which is the common treatment for it, and so far it's working like a charm.
Oh, good.
So we'll see how that goes. But
okay.
I just wanted to know if perhaps that particular illness had shown up on that particular list at any time.
Well, you know, I don't have the list in front of me, and it's possible that it could have, because a lot of the drug side effects end up appearing as AIDS illnesses.
Okay.
So.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you, Matthew.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye. Sarah, you're on the Air on the Impact program on KLOS with Christine Maggiore.
Hi, Frank.
Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Christine.
Hi.
I'm just so glad that somebody is finally speaking up. And, I mean, I've been telling people for years about, you know, things that I learned by reading, and they would back away from me like I'm crazy, you know, and say, oh, if you don't think you can get AIDS that easy, you know, you're crazy. And I have two questions, and the second one is more important than the first one. The first one is, I'm wondering, what about the statistics that are given, and what about all those people who never take any kind of test and live all their lives HIV positive, but no one ever knows that? And I'm wondering how that might affect the given statistics. In other words, I believe that there's probably a lot of people who live long, healthy lives that just don't know that they're HIV positive. And my second question is, I was wondering if you might address the issue of intravenous drug users and the efficacy of needle exchange programs and how that might be affecting the whole situation.
Now, those are interesting questions. It's hard to know how many people out there test HIV positive. And again, while this certainly is not a test that you could say tests for HIV, going by the notion that somebody who tests positive has a shortened life expectancy and requires the drug treatment, it would be interesting to know, you know, what the status of all Americans might be, and to test people who are older and find out. But like I mentioned to an earlier caller, those of us who are HIV positive, healthy, and not in treatment programs and not taking the medicines and not seeing AIDS doctors with their very narrow focus are not the subject of study. We're not given a voice. We're not counted. So it's very difficult to know that. I know through my experience that there are so many people all around the world. I mentioned earlier we had a request to start up a branch of our organization in Zimbabwe from somebody who tested HIV positive, has not taken any treatment drugs the same year as me. We have another branch of our organization in Zambia, led by somebody who's HIV positive, healthy, has not taken treatment drugs, and has been positive for 10 years. His wife is positive. They just had a little healthy baby. So it's quite common, yet nobody's counting us. With regard to your second question about needle exchange, interestingly, there have been studies that show that HIV positive rates are higher among people engaging in needle exchange programs. And again, I think we need to look at not so much the needle, but what's in the needle, yeah, and what people are doing. Most people who are using injection drugs are sacrificing their health, their living standards, the conditions under which they exist, everything to be able to get drugs. These certainly are not healthy people. And I have had letters from people who run treatment programs for former IV drug users, and also there is medical literature that shows the same thing, that when you take somebody who's an injection drug user for many years, you treat them for what is common malnourishment, even though they're HIV positive, they will go on to lead perfectly healthy lives as long as they don't live with the idea that HIV is out to kill them and they must take strong and specific action against that.
Right. Okay. I appreciate your answers. I was just going to mention that, yeah, I lived with a man for many years that was HIV positive. When I met him, he told me that he was dying of AIDS. And luckily enough, by the time we parted ways, he would say that he was living being HIV positive. He wasn't dying of AIDS anymore. And just because of having been with him personally and going to the infectious disease specialist with him and doing a lot of reading and finally got him to change his whole treatment program. And as far as I know, he's still alive and well to this day, and that's 20 years I've known the guy.
Well, yeah, I know a lot of 20-year veterans of HIV-positive test results who have not followed the treatment protocols and are just treating themselves as people who have the right and the ability to live in health, and they do.
Right, and I agree with the whole thing. I'm really glad for what you do.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sarah.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye. We'll take one last call, and Scott, you're on the air with Christine Maggiore from Alive and Well.
Hello there. Have a question. I've had four or five HIV tests, and what is the correct test to have done? I want to make sure that I've been having the right one.
Boy, Scott, if there were a test that tested for HIV, I'd be happy to tell you about it. But unfortunately, none of the tests that are called HIV tests are tests for HIV. And I want to share something interesting with you. Recently, I was filmed for a segment of 2020 that should be airing sometime this month or next month. And as part of the segment, they wanted me to take an HIV test on camera, because certain AIDS activists have claimed that I'm HIV negative and I just do this, I don't know, to get attention or something. So I agreed to take a test on camera if they would fund my taking a viral load test, because I haven't had one of those in a long time. And I know they don't test for the virus, but I just wanted to know where my level was so I could talk about it with people and show them. I've had viral load levels as high as 365,000 and not been sick, and yet up until a few weeks ago at 10,000 you were supposed to start drug treatment. Now they say 55,000, and I've surpassed that also. But anyway, when I went in to take the antibody test, as they call it, and the viral load test, as they call it, I wanted both done at the same time. The clinic where I went said, well, wait a minute, if you haven't tested antibody positive, then you can't have a viral load test. And I said, why not? It's being paid for. If I give you $195, I should be able to take a viral load test. And they said, no, we can't do that because the viral load test is so sensitive that it will pick up virus. It will read as virus stuff that's in people who test HIV negative. So we can't give that test to people who are HIV negative because it causes a lot of upset and trouble.
Wow.
So rather than, I mean, the way normally you make sure a test works is that you test it in a population not affected by the problem. That's called a control group or something in science. Yet in this instance, because the test is so nonspecific, we just say, oh, well, you can't use it in people who are HIV negative because, you know, it only works in people who are positive. And then whatever that test happens to pick up in people who are positive, well, gosh darn, that's virus. But if it picks it up in somebody who's negative, it's a mistake. And there's lots of studies in the medical literature showing people who are HIV negative who've had viral loads. So don't be taken in by the idea that you can go out and get a test for virus. That is not correct.
All right.
Sorry.
That's all right. I guess that answers my question.
Thank you, Scott.
All right, thank you.
Bye-bye. The whole idea of testing. You know, you were the first person that really got it through my thick skull, because I'm kind of a skeptical person anyway. You know, I want to test, and therefore this is proof. And yet you've said on this program for many years, hey, you know, this whole notion of test you should question anyway.
Well, it's hard because I think all of us want to be responsible.
Sure.
And everybody feels more comfortable with a yes or no answer, certainly. And all these years of being told, you know, it's the right thing to do, it's what you need to find out, you know, find out your HIV status, and you get in relationships with people and they want to know, what the heck do you do? It's really difficult. But the fact of the matter is that these tests aren't testing for HIV, anything specific or unique to HIV. Why they're called HIV tests, you know, it's kind of like a marketing name more than anything else. And people say to me, you know, should I test? And I say, I think you should find out what the test you're thinking of taking actually can and cannot do, and then make up your own mind. And sometimes I tell people, you know, hey, if you feel comfortable with the idea that you're taking a test for HIV and you're happy to live with whatever result comes up, knowing that that isn't a measure of actual virus, then take the test. For most people, it'll come back negative. And so, you know, it's whatever they want to do is fine. But I think people really need to understand that, because when you do get a positive test result back, it is life-altering. Even if you know everything that I know and that other people know about this, you live with the social stigma, the pressures. You know, people say to me, well, you know, Christine, if you don't think that testing HIV positive necessarily leads to AIDS, if I'm positive, do I have to tell people before I have sex with them? And I always say it's really important to disclose that information, because you have to think of how other people perceive this, what their fears are, what their misconceptions or ideas are about this. And also there's the law. So even if you're HIV positive and you know the facts about this matter, you feel comfortable living your life as a normal, healthy person. Unfortunately, we live in a society that doesn't adopt that viewpoint readily. So you have to take into consideration other people's views and the law with regard to this. Can I mention something kind of
Please,
funny?
Absolutely.
Monday night, I got a call that there was a program on CBS television, Judging Amy. And it was an episode about a woman who was HIV positive, a mother, ran an alternative AIDS organization, had written a book about HIV and AIDS that raised a lot of questions about the veracity of what we're told, and who had been taken into court for choosing to breastfeed her child. I thought that was really interesting, because it sounded like a program about me. And what was interesting about the approach of the program is that this fictitious person had a doctor testify on her behalf that there was no medical evidence that HIV was the cause of AIDS, that there was no scientific evidence that virus, HIV virus, had been found in breast milk. And the judge sympathized with this woman but decided that she had to go with popular medical opinion and could not support her contrarian views, so to speak. But I thought that was really interesting that that made it on the air and how that was handled. It's a show called Judging Amy. I don't watch television, really, so I'm not familiar with it, but I got a couple calls from people about that, and I thought that was really odd because, you know, I mean, HIV positive, runs an alternative AIDS organization, has a kid, wrote a book. I mean, gee, sounds a little familiar.
Christine, mention for a moment again, even if it's redundant, about your nonprofit, about the meetings, about information people can attain, phone number, and also about the fundraising concert coming up in less than a week.
Sure, it's never redundant. Alive and Well AIDS Alternatives is an organization that provides information challenging most of our common assumptions about HIV and AIDS. It's all based on scientific, medical, and epidemiological facts. A lot of it can be accessed through our website at questionaids.com. We welcome people to call us toll-free at 877-411-AIDS. 877-411-AIDS. We have free information packs that we can send discreetly by mail. We have all kinds of support for people who are investigating this and for people who are HIV positive and are thinking outside the lines. We have particular support for women who are expectant or current mothers who test HIV positive and need to make important choices about drug therapies. We have monthly meetings the third Wednesday of every month in West Hollywood Park. We meet and have, from 6:30 till 7:30, a class called Relax. It's just information that I teach, and I share this information as an opportunity for people to come and hear it firsthand and ask all kinds of questions. And it's certainly not intended to be anything except an exchange of ideas. Again, this is not a philosophy or a belief system. We're here to provide information upon which people can base important decisions in their own investigation into these issues. Our benefit concert is one of our special events, and this is one in a series of benefit concerts we're looking forward to having at the El Rey Theater. It's called Rock the AIDS Establishment. It's a benefit for Alive and Well AIDS Alternatives. Features two bands, Venice and Slidell. It's at the El Rey Theater on Sunday, February 11th. The El Rey's in Hollywood between Fairfax and La Brea on Wilshire. Tickets are just $10, so it's real easy to come out and support New Directions in AIDS and support Informed Choice. You can have a really great time for a really wonderful cause. And also, the owner of the El Rey has made special discounts on drinks and food for that evening in support of our work. And if you want to know more about that, again, you can call 877-411-AIDS, 877-411-AIDS.
Christine, as always, I appreciate you coming on the program and sharing your information and talking about your life and what's going on. And I've got one last question, and then anything you want to provide in closing, in terms of a closing comment, feel free to do so. I want to know how Charlie's doing.
Oh.
I want to know how he's doing.
Well, my son, Charlie, he is just wonderful. I mean, he's 3 years old and 4 months. He's so bright and so energetic. He has a 14-hour day, which is hard on me. And he's just such a wonderful kid. I mean, he knows words like esophagus. He understands there's magma at the core of the earth. He knows about stars and sea creatures. He tells stories. I think he wants to direct.
Oh, my gosh.
He has little plays that you can participate in. Okay, now you're this, and you do that, and you come in, and you say this. He's got an enormous vocabulary. He's just such a person. He's so amazing. And I mean, every once in a while, I stop and think that he might not have been here had I not had, I can't even say the courage to pursue this. It was a twist of fate, because I almost didn't have my child because of the pressure that I felt to live as an HIV positive mother and what the ramifications would be for my son. I mean, how would the world regard him? I almost terminated my pregnancy, and it was through an amazing, magical twist of fate, a misread ultrasound, that I ended up not doing that and having my son. And every day of my life, I am so thankful to whatever benevolent forces in the universe made that ultrasound screw up, because he is just the greatest joy of my life. I learned so much from him. It is so wonderful to be a parent. And I find that when people, like people in our neighborhood, they see Charlie, they know about me and my work. I mean, I'm very open about all of this, so everybody knows who knows me. And they see Charlie, and they hear the news and information, and they can't hold both of those things in their head at the same time. When they see this vibrantly healthy little kid who he's never had any of the problems that their, quote, normal children have had, and they have to let go of all the ideas about HIV or defy what they see in front of them every day. And thankfully, my friends and neighbors, they just see Charlie for who he is, just this bright, wonderful, healthy child. We have a pediatrician who totally supports that. And he's just, you know, tearing up the world, and it's great. And I hope that by the time he grows up, that we will have come to some realistic assessments of what is going on with regard to HIV and AIDS, and have put this into its proper perspective, and be directing our efforts based on sound scientific fact and reliable information, and that he can live in a better world than we're living in now with regard to all of this. But for a lot of people, he kind of symbolizes the possibility of life for people who test HIV positive, because I was told very clearly, you know, you can't have kids. And my heart goes out so much to people who test HIV positive and they're told, oh yeah, you can have kids as long as you're on drug therapies. My goodness, what we see with these drug therapies in children, it is just heartbreaking. You know, they say that HIV positive children don't grow normally, but these are the ones that they're looking at who are on these drug therapies, that their growth stops at a certain point. Or, you know, HIV causes them to have XYZ problems. Well, these are all children on the drug therapies. The HIV positive kids I know, probably because their parents are so well informed about issues of health, are the most vibrantly healthy, gloriously alive, fiercely intelligent kids you could ever hope to see. And it just breaks my heart when I hear about people who think because they've tested positive, they can't have children, or the only conditions they can have children under is toxic medicines throughout their pregnancy, cesarean section at birth, AZT transfusion during labor, follow-up with AZT after the birth, and formula feeding. Women are told they can't breastfeed. I chose to breastfeed my son after doing a lot of research into this. It was not a decision I made lightly, but the fact of the matter is there is no evidence that HIV is in breast milk. I chose to breastfeed my son for the benefits of living food that changes with his growing needs. It's exactly what a little boy needs to develop his brain. I mean, it's so important for his immunity and everything. And the result is just this wonderful child. And as I've gone on, you can tell I'm so proud of him. And I'm so happy that he's in my world. It just, you know, it's like sunshine every day.
That's wonderful. Anything else you want to share in closing?
Oh, gosh, haven't I gone on long? I don't know. I just really hope that people can open up their minds and their hearts to consider alternative viewpoints. There's nothing wrong with skepticism, with questioning, with investigation, with learning. Certainly, we can't come up with answers unless we're asking questions. And when our questions are limited, so are our answers. And I think it's really important. I mean, even given the fact, you know, those who hold most fervently to the common perceptions of HIV and AIDS with these shifting treatment guidelines and the new admission that these drugs are highly toxic, maybe that's opening a little space in their minds for them to consider other viewpoints. We consider, as thinking human beings, the other side of so many issues, yet so many thinking, caring people are of the impression that there's one side to AIDS. There's never one side to any issue. I just really encourage people to look into this and do so with the idea that learning is a good thing, that questions lead to answers, and that understanding means we can really help people. And that's what Alive and Well is all about, is just getting down to really helping people, to getting a realistic assessment of what's going on, to enable HIV positives to be treated as people, and to, you know, allow people to live lives that are free from unnecessary fear, free from unnecessary medical intervention. And I think that's a right that we all have and that we should exercise.
It's always wonderful to see you and hear you.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I really appreciate this forum.
Absolutely. We will have more of Impact. We go to 5 o'clock, and this is KLOS.
To do.